So a few more reflections on supports for continuity, the topic of continuity. One that I didn't mention this morning but did come up in the group this morning is using wisdom reflections, or just reminding ourselves of wisdom that we know or understand or have heard. So this might take the form of just a kind of gentle dropping in a reminder, this is impermanent, or this is just a thought, or something like that. Just a something which we may not quite have the feeling of, or quite have the insight into in the moment, but that we know or that we have heard from teachings. Sayadaw Utejaniya sometimes calls this borrowing wisdom, especially when we are just reminding ourselves of wisdom that we haven't directly experienced, but that we've heard a lot of and that perhaps we have some confidence in or faith in or trust in. So that those kind of reminders, and the Buddha actually mentions this in the suttas, the Buddha encourages us to reflect. He says one should understand, or one should know, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. And so a reflection on the teaching of anatta, for instance, or this is impermanent. And so the Buddha does actually speak of using wisdom reflections. So I've seen in my own practice that sometimes when the mind is a little bit, when there's not wise attitude, dropping in a wisdom reflection can make a little more space so that there's a little more willingness to be with what's here and less resistance. And that will support continuity. When the mind is more willing to be here, when it's not fighting, when it's not pulling in and out because of resistance or holding on. So using wisdom reflections can be helpful. And in using wisdom reflections, you know, Sayadaw talked about borrowing wisdom. We can borrow the language from our teachers or borrow the language from the suttas. But what I've seen in my own practice is that as understanding begins to emerge in my own experience, if there's an insight or an understanding about my mind, about a particular pattern or habit, sometimes, not always, but sometimes as the understanding emerges, the understanding itself is not... is usually not language-based. It's not so conceptual. It's more of the aha feeling, or the more of a sense of just understanding, that we get something, that we understand something. But often, the way our systems work is when something like that happens, it will arise in the mind in an expression of thought sometimes, or in an image, or something like that. There'll be a kind of a correlate of the understanding expressed in a more conceptual form. For myself, around the seeing of the self-hatred, for instance, when I saw in one experience, I saw just a very clear arising of the self-hatred in one moment, and the recognition of how it was just a thought that was being believed, and the language that came into my mind is, this is just a thought. And so that kind of expression, this is just whatever is arising, this is just, became a way in which my mind had expressed its wisdom to itself. And so over the next days, what I found was using that language in my own mind to remind myself, as I was caught by something, I could remind myself, oh, this is just this is just this arising. This is just frustration. This is just, and that kind of resonated the language that my mind had used to express that understanding. Using that language back to myself made it kind of easier to tap into the understanding, made the mind a little more willing to kind of open to, okay, right, I can have a little more space around this. So I often encourage people to notice how their minds express that wisdom, and that those expressions can be valuable for ourselves to kind of tap into the wisdom that we already know or have experienced. We could call this borrowing wisdom from ourselves, borrowing the wisdom from the way in which our mind expressed it or understood it. So using wisdom reflections, and this can be just really gentle. It's just dropping in that thought into the mind, and then, you know, just seeing how that thought affects the system, affects the willingness to be here with this experience. Sometimes it can be supportive and can actually help support the continuity, support the ability of the mind to stay with something that had been a little more challenging. And then a little more on the daily life side of things. I just briefly mentioned this morning that you might be curious through the day if there are these kind of reservoirs or pools or kind of rabbit holes where mindfulness tends to get lost. And to just be curious about that, you know, to kind of at first noticing where mindfulness gets lost, it's information for us. And as the mind begins to recognize, oh, this is where mindfulness gets lost, there can be a little bit of curiosity about what happens there. Again, not to try to force the mind to stay present in that situation or going into that activity, but there might be some interest about, well, what happens here? You know, well, what goes on in this situation for myself, I think one of the first times I explored this, I began recognizing that I lost awareness when I was pretty aware in many activities in the restroom, but then I would find myself just waking up or becoming aware again, staring at myself in the mirror while I was washing my hands. And I had no recollection of intending to look in the mirror. There'd been this like gap, this little black hole of mindfulness, a little, you know, this place of mindfulness not arising. And so I just began to get curious about that. I wasn't trying to force my mind to stay present every moment in the restroom. But it was kind of like, okay, I'm going into the restroom. Let's see if we can discover what happens. When do I start looking at myself in the mirror? And it took quite a while, actually, you know. Well, a while. It took probably 3 or 4 days of doing this exploration. And at some point, I'd find myself staring at myself in the mirror. So, oh, I missed it again. And, just next time, okay, I get an opportunity the next time this happens. At some point, I was washing my hands, and it's like, oh, I'm not looking at the mirror. And then, you know, then there was this kind of, just this intention, this habit of looking up. And I discovered, this is just a habit. You know, this is what I've done for a lot of my life while I was washing my hands, as I've looked at myself in the mirror. You know, it wasn't like some, deep kind of, you know, need to be seen or anything. There wasn't a particular, like, you know, emotional thing going on around it. It was just a habit. It was what I had done, you know, I don't know, looking at how I look when I'm going out into the world. And so, it was just a habit. And I could see, at some point, I could see the intention to look up. So, you know, that was just the investigation around that that simple or that, you know, trivial kind of thing. But it was something that gave me the confidence that these investigations can help the mind to find their way into areas where we're not usually mindful. So that kind of exploration, it's not trying to hold your attention present all day, but more, these areas are areas where I tend to lose mindfulness. And as you notice that, as you identify particular areas where you tend to lose mindfulness, activities, things that you do, for instance, especially, then as you may notice as you're heading into an activity, oh, this is where I tend to lose mindfulness. I think the other day somebody talked about, sitting down at the computer and actually bringing that kind of intention to be connected and be aware in that time. You can, as you're headed to an activity, hold that as an intention, but not as a holding on to. So if you're just holding on to a willful, I'm going to be mindful of this moment after moment, that kind of effort to be mindful, that kind of effort to do the mindfulness may obscure the very subtle movements of mind that tend to take us away from mindfulness. And so it's a kind of a delicate place of being curious about what the mind naturally does that pulls us out of mindfulness. But again, if you're, the activity of doing mindfulness is a pretty gross kind of activity. It's a pretty high level function in the mind. And many of these things that pull us out of mindfulness are much subtler. So in order to see some of those things, see the way the mind slips out of mindfulness, we have to be willing to let the mind slip out of mindfulness and see if there can be a kind of curiosity about when does that happen or how does that happen, and just over and over keep kind of playing with that edge of where the mindfulness slips out. And at a certain point there may be enough capacity of mindfulness to almost ride that slip as the mindfulness begins to shift or slip out of what usually would be the present moment. And often it's a shift to a different experience that we're not used to being aware of, that the mindfulness can kind of go along with that shift and be aware of what's happening there and learn something about even very subtle ways in which we can sometimes get caught or slip out of mindfulness. And then another piece around continuity. And speaking about continuity, and this slightly touches on a question that came in, although I will read the question and respond to it in more detail in a moment. It sounds like the aim is like continuous mindfulness all the time, and that that's what we're going for, and that that's what, is needed in order to have understanding or have insight. And certainly that's kind of what it sounds like, continuity is where, is a condition, actually. A continuous mindfulness is a condition that supports understanding. So as the mindfulness gets more continuous, there can be more seeing, more learning, more understanding of what's going on in our minds. So we aim towards, we cultivate the conditions that will support more continuity of mindfulness. But when we talk about that, it sounds like we have to have some kind of continuity that's going like all day long and before we get some kind of insight or understanding. And in my own practice, in my own exploration of mindfulness, particularly mindfulness in daily life, really early on in my practice of mindfulness in daily life, I had this experience. I had just been practicing around being aware around a particular mind state, around anger, just kind of inclining towards, okay, yep, here's anger again, let me be aware of it. And so I had kind of been practicing with that, and there's a way in which, the mindfulness was becoming very attuned, very keenly attuned to the arising of anger. And I would begin to notice that it's almost like the arising of anger began to be a mindfulness bell, that when the anger was arising, the mindfulness would begin to be arising with it. And so there was much more capacity to hold the anger and not be responding out of it, but just to, oh, here it is again. Okay, yep, this is unpleasant, and here's what's going on. And so there was this kind of cultivation of the awareness around this particular mind state. And this was going on kind of like periodically through the day for a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of months. I was exploring this this particular practice. And then one day, I was just in my kitchen, and I was doing most of this investigation in daily life. So not in sitting practice, but in daily life, just noticing, yep, I'm on the bus, and wow, there's the anger. I'm thinking about this person, and yep, there it is. Or I'm sitting in front of my computer, and oh, there it is, or whatever. So it was really, it was getting very, the mindfulness was being able to arise with that in a wide variety of conditions. So not particularly tied to sitting meditation. And then one day in my kitchen, I was cutting an apple and noticed a thought arise in my mind. And in this moment, I hadn't been trying to be mindful. I was just doing my stuff in my kitchen. But in that moment, as I cut the apple and I saw this thought arise in my mind, there was this what I call a little burst of continuity. That mindfulness arose as that thought arose, and the thought was about the person that I was angry with. So, I can understand kind of in retrospect that the cultivation of the awareness of mindfulness, the awareness of anger about that particular person, was now also attuning me to be aware when thoughts arose about that person. And I could see in that moment that the thought was arising. The thought was arising, and I was not angry yet. So there was the thought before the anger. And then there was the recognition of, the kind of incline or pull towards the anger. Kind of like the intention, the whole, like a freight train of energy, of intention inclining me towards jumping on that thought and thinking more thoughts in order to get angry at this person. But the mind in that moment understood that way lies suffering. And the mind just let the whole thing go. It wasn't something I was doing. This whole thing took maybe a second, seeing all of this that I just described, that took about a second in the mind. And the kind of the recognition of, oh, the mind is not picking up this anger. It's like I kind of stood there waiting to get angry, and I didn't get angry. It was shocking to see the power of that mindfulness in that moment. And in reflecting back on this and looking back at it, it's like, in that moment, there was this little burst of continuity. Mindfulness arose in conjunction with that thought. There was about a two-second burst of continuity of mindfulness that was very powerful and very penetrating into that experience. Seeing that intention of anger and seeing the mind let it go. And so that has given me some understanding that when we talk about continuity, it's like the power of mindfulness that is continuous moment after moment, can be extremely powerful, even if it only arises for 2 seconds. That there can be something that's seen in the mind and released, let go of, in a very brief period of time. I was not practicing like continuously that day. I had been not cultivating continuous mindfulness, and yet this little burst of continuity arose because of the conditions that had been being cultivated around, in this case, the awareness of anger and the awareness of thoughts about this particular person. So there was this little burst of continuity. And so I say this partly as an encouragement, particularly for daily life, that we don't have to like kind of just sigh and say, well, okay, yeah, I can't get real good continuity in daily life because I keep going to these other things. But the more that we intend in the direction of connecting with our experience with mindfulness, and the more that we are able to kind of be aware when the moments of mindfulness return, I talk about that, seeing mindfulness infuse something, that waking up into, oh, awareness is back, that kind of recognition, oh, awareness is arising here. In that moment, there may be the opportunity, the mindfulness may be arising with something and seeing something very clearly. And so it doesn't necessarily take this kind of churning and like being mindful all day long before understanding will arise. It does seem to take a kind of a commitment of, yeah, I'm going to keep trying to be mindful. I'm going to keep trying to connect with this practice. It's like we can't just give up. But we will forget. Of course we forget. And so the But every time we remember, every time we have this connection to connect with that intention, and that will bear fruit. It will support these, I'm calling bursts of continuity. Now I'll touch on this question, which is also connected to continuity. All the instructions on cultivating continuity of mindfulness in order to support the development of wisdom make complete sense. However, I did notice that I heard these instructions today in a way that I hadn't before, as implying that mindfulness ought to be moving towards complete continuity. But mindfulness as part of the path is conditioned. It must arise and pass. There is an awareness associated with emptiness, which seems to be of a different order. There's an awareness associated with the trail to the Grand Canyon, and some other awareness associated with the Grand Canyon itself. How do you see the relation between these two? This is similar to the point you made earlier that there are conditions we can cultivate in order to open to the unconditioned. I'm curious how you talk about that transition or transformation or shift. So, yes, what we're talking about with continuity is cultivating the conditions for the mind to be able to open to insight. And maybe we don't have to think about the unconditioned here per se. I mean, that even just the understandings that the mind can open to. But again, as I just described that experience, it's like those moments of continuity can be powerful in just a little, like split second, there can be an opening to that. If our minds are present as mindfulness re-arises, that can be a powerful continuity in those few moments that can open us to understanding or insight, could even potentially open us to the unconditioned. The story of Patachara, cultivating continuity in her daily life and wondering after many years, I think like 25 years of practice, why she hadn't had the understanding and towards the understanding of freedom, that deep truth of realization. and she concentrated her mind, and she partly did this by, you know, washing her feet and being present with all of this activity, and then standing up and walking into her room, sitting down on her bed, and then putting out the lamp. And just being there while that's happening, in that moment, her mind opened to release, to freedom. The mind was freed. Pulled out the wick and the mind was freed when the lamp went out. And that kind of gives us a sense that it's like this continuity is a condition that allows the mind to open to or be aware, for instance, like, you know, that we have arrived at the Grand Canyon. You know, it's like, and yet there is, as the question points out, there's an awareness associated with the trail, and perhaps another awareness associated with the Grand Canyon itself. I'm not so sure about that, whether it's a completely different order of awareness or not. I don't know. It may be. But there is the kind of the effort that we do have to make to cultivate that continuity. Now, in terms of whether mindfulness ought to be moving towards complete continuity, my understanding is that the Buddha lived in awareness, you know, after the freedom of awakening, that is kind of the state that one may live in. But that it ought to be moving in that direction. I mean, it seems to me that, again, you know, it's just like it moves as it does. Mindfulness is a conditioned phenomenon. It arises, it passes. We are aware when it arises. But again, the being aware when it arises creates the conditions for us to be more aware when it arises again. And so it does kind of incline us in the direction towards more continuity at times. It's definitely not an increasing curve, you know, it's not continually getting more and more continuous. It's way more bumpy than that. Although, you know, it may be kind of roughly kind of going in the direction, but with a lot of up and down waves as we go. And yet we do need to look at whether we're on the path or not. You know, the path of practice, I think that the use of the analogy of the path is a good one, that the Eightfold Path. If we're walking on the trail to the Grand Canyon and we decide to follow a deer trail, or we get diverted by a deer trail and we wander out at somewhere else, then, you know, we're not going to get to the Grand Canyon. And so we do need to stay on the path. We need to cultivate that condition to be on the path. And so there is this kind of combination of cultivating the conditions that support the arising of mindfulness and support the cultivation of that continuity. And then there is the availability. I guess I would say that that cultivation of that continuity of mindfulness creates conditions for the mind to be available to understand something new, to understand the truths of impermanent, unreliable not-self, to experience the release from dukkha. So it's more, I think, I guess, you know, if the release from dukkha, if that experience is a different order or a different kind of awareness, then I guess what I would say is that what we're cultivating, this establishment of mindfulness that we're cultivating, is the kind of awareness that allows us to be able to see or open to or touch into that release or that understanding. Now, I think it does sometimes happen that even without this, I mean, people talk about various, like, awakenings in various traditions, and they can be spontaneous awakenings that haven't been cultivated with a particular practice. And so some, although, you know, in the Buddhist understanding, the understanding would be that that person had been cultivating it in prior lives, or, you know, and that there's a, you know, the conditions arose in that moment for that spontaneous, for that understanding to happen, were not spontaneous, but were conditioned. And so, you know, I think some of the, some teachers, I have no idea who the first teacher to say this was, but something along the lines of, awakening is an accident. The practice makes us accident prone. That accident could happen. I don't know that I like that language so much, because it's not accidental in the way that we think of accident as just kind of happening out of the blue. It's conditioned. You know, the awakening itself is conditioned. Whether or not we understand the conditions, you know, what led to the particular experience of awakening. I think I told the story the other day that there was a freedom that happened while I wasn't looking. You know, I didn't see the conditions that led to that freedom of release from that pattern. I experienced later that I had been released from it. And there are other times when I saw very directly a pattern arising and the release from it. The self-hatred was one of those, you know, seeing that coming into being, the mind just seeing, wow, this is just a thought that's being believed, and the mind just let it go. That was an experience of seeing the release and understanding that understanding the wisdom that allowed that release. And so I think there are different ways that we can touch into the understandings and the insights that come, and the cultivation of continuity is a powerful way to support more of that possibility for actually experiencing wisdom, not just thinking about it, or not just hearing about it and thinking that makes sense, but the kind of the way it penetrates in through our whole system, and there's a way in which it's understood at a deeper level than a conceptual level. So I'm going to turn off the recording.